things that's been really wonderful to see is how you have been using those yard signs. Yard signs are kind of this simple but amazing ways to kind of say, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, and also, you know, to invite others to be along. That's why, you know, they're used so frequently in certainly real estate, but also in political campaigns. They're almost overused in political campaigns. One of the things, it seems like strange fruit by the side of the road, you know, kind of, you know, crops up. And I haven't seen a lot of that here lately, but they're good. I've seen pictures that you have sent in of how it looks in front of your house. One of my houses is in that, or one of my my house. I told you, it's been a rough day. My house is in some of the pictures that have been going around. We actually have two signs. There's the sign that we have put up, and also the sign that Floris, my wife is a pastor at Floris, has put up as well. I like my sign better. They'll actually be doing a similar series in October. We're out ahead of them. And I've seen them, you know, in front of homes. I've seen them on doors, apartment doors, assisted living doors, and they're just really, really neat. I hope that that has been a kind of a stimulus for a conversation, too. It's like, why do you have a kindness sign out in front of your house? Because it's hard to be kind right now. This is tough. And so the series had been an attempt to kind of, you know, reintroduce those things or to reconsider some of those things in the midst of a really contentious environment. I think you're all not going to argue with me about the arguments that are going on right now. I mean, we certainly could argue about issues and people, but we certainly can agree that it's contentious. So one of the things that I want to talk to you in regards to this today, we talked about kindness and compassion already, but today I want to talk to you about humility. Years ago, when, as I like to say, when dinosaurs ruled the earth, I was, you know, a college student. My first job outside of high school, when I left high school, I went to college, but I got a job in a local radio station, which I really enjoyed that. I was thinking about maybe a career in journalism or communications at the time, so it was a really wonderful job. But I was a high school kid, right? Dumb as a bucket high school kid. And now I'm a dumb as a bucket middle-ager, I guess. Job was great, but one of the things that you had to do were social kind of engagements and appearances. And we had this one dinner. It was a dinner to honor a beloved member of our community who had also been on the radio, had kind of a popular, well-known, personality-driven show, and he was retiring. And so the radio station and kind of like some of the political figures in the community were going to have a shindig for him. We had it at the local hotel. It was a Ramada, right? And so we got into the dining room of the Ramada with, you know, not a huge crowd, but it was sort of an important crowd. And it was hard in that to get there early, and I couldn't figure out where I was supposed to sit, all right? So I get there. I'm not sure where I'm supposed to sit, and I'm hungry. I'm basically a teenage boy. And remember, teenage boys will eat paint chips off the wall. Sorry, it's not true, I know. But I was hungry. And so I came in there, and I wasn't sure, and it was not really clear what the head table is. You know, when you have, like, some of these events, the head table is really obvious, right? But then, in this particular case, it wasn't. But I didn't know that. I was just like, hey, I'm hungry. I want to sit down and eat. And so I found, like, the corner of what seemed like a good space. I was talking to my friend, and I sat down and started to nibble on the salad that was right there in front of me. Of course, And then one of the organizers came over and said, "You're in the wrong seat. This is the head table." I didn't know what the head table was. And so I was demoted. By the way, there's a remarkable story in the scriptures that Jesus goes through this exact thing. And we can talk about that another time. But I want to just remember this. The lady says to me, "Get up, you idiot," you know, or something along those lines. Not exactly a quote. But so I'm like, okay. And so I look around, and like most of the seats are taken except for at the very far end, at the very, very, very end, 7 miles away. And I begin the walk of shame, all 7 miles to go. And then I realize that I'd been nibbling on that salad. Now, my mama told me, "You touch food, it's yours, and you're going to eat it," right? And so I reverse myself, start the 7 mile journey back, you know, grab that salad, right? 7 miles back to the far end of the table. I go, I get there, and there's a fresh salad, and I'm like, okay. So I trade the salad out, 7 miles back to the head table, and there was somebody sitting there like looking at, "Where's my salad?" And I'm like, "Enjoy your salad." And then 7 miles back, and I finally sat down in humiliation. Okay. That's not the humility I want to talk to you about. That is not the humility. That was humiliation. There was shame in that. This is a kind of a sort of a light, silly example of shame. But there is also a lot of humiliation that people carry and encounter all their lives. And it forms and shapes inside of us distortions of how we understand ourselves, of who we are, and how we are to respond, how we are to react to those things where we are kind of brought low. So as much as I'm kind of like playing very lightly with that shameful moment, I also want to acknowledge that there are shames that we carry around with us in our hearts that are hard to laugh at. Now, it's easy to kind of conflate humility around that. Oh, we need to be lowly. Remember that you are just a low-down sinner and that you're a mess. Don't forget where you came from, is a phrase that we used in the mountains. Don't get to putting airs on about what you are not, even though that might include the dignity of who you are. And my argument has been that, you know, we are children of God, that inside of us we have the very image of God impressed, right? So humility is important, but also don't forget the dignity, the beauty of who you are. So how does humility fit with this? What I want to argue is that humility is a disposition inside of ourselves, an understanding inside of ourselves, that we have a place at the table. I certainly, even in my own humility as I made the 7 mile walk of shame, I had a place at that table. And so do you. That's part of the dignity of your humanity. Even with the scars and the shame and the sin, you still have a place at the table. You still have been invited, not just to the Eucharistic table, but to the table of life. But in that also, there are others and otters who have a place at that table. That there is an actual space that we can occupy together. And it does not have to be that place where we are like trying to figure out, am I better than this person? Or how do I not reveal my own shame and try to put some airs on? A form of humility that has nothing to do with absolute meekness and weakness is where we're going. And neither does it mean to be self-effacing and living inside of submissiveness to other people. Humility is an attitude of spiritual modesty, of understanding your place at that table, but also the awareness and the openness for others to be at that table. Spiritual modesty that comes from understanding that our place in the larger order of things is with others. We have a place, they have a place. It entails not taking our desires, our successes, our failings too seriously. Why would they want to have me at the table? Why would I not have a better place at the table? Why not sit in the corner with the picked through salad? Now, to understand our place at the table, we ought to understand that from our connection with others, despite our strengths and weaknesses, we have still those places together. And a way to begin this, a way to open ourselves to this process, is to actually sit at the table and be in conversation with other people. That's why breaking bread is so important. Sometimes, maybe you've experienced this. You've had an opportunity to kind of be present with another person and to hear their story, to learn about where they came from, how they came to understand and believe certain things. What kind of things shaped them and formed them? I've had the opportunity to sit with people I've admired and found them to be people. I mean, I admired them. I think they're awesome. Still think they're awesome. But also, they're just as messed up as I am. Just as in need of grace as I am and as you are. So these conversations are really important. And these are the kind of conversations that we have need of in our society and in our environment right now. Certainly there are, folks who are aligning in different political kind of positions. There's red folks and blue folks, right? We've talked about that in these last few weeks. And sometimes it's awfully hard to see places of commonality when you're not the same color. We've been talking about trying to find ways to be purple together, but a way to do that with humility, to practice humility, is actually to sit and engage the other person. This is a well-known thing. This is nothing new, but it's something that's awfully hard to practice. Now, at the United Methodist Church of the Resurrection, there was an opportunity for folks to kind of gather together around table with each other. They ran a project together, recorded some of those conversations, and saw how this actually played out. I'm going to play one of those for you now. It's a compressed version of that kind of conversation. One person is aligned with the conservative movement. She's in red. Right? Another person is aligned with the progressive, the democratic movement, and she's in blue. And they, are coming together. Let's watch this.
So I think we disagree on virtually everything.
I think we probably do.
What made you want to come here today and do this?
So I've lost a couple of people in my life recently due to politics. And one of them, who's the best, she was my best friend for 10 years.
Wow.
And I just think we can't live like this as a nation. And, you know, the only way we're going to be able to stop that is if you and I sit down and we have a conversation and we talk about our similarities and we also talk about all of our differences and we just appreciate who the other one is for whoever they are and wherever they came from in their background. And, you know, I think if we did that more as a society, I think we'd probably be in a better place. What made you decide to come here today?
I'm asking myself that question right now. Well, when Adam talked about it in his sermon, it sounded like a good idea. I have, like I said, I have three sons. I have one who is left of Bernie Sanders. I've got one that's, you know, right of whoever on the other side. And so we just got things we don't talk about. And it's like, is that really the best way just to have things that are completely off limits? Or is there a way to disagree respectfully?
I figured you would be further to the right, so I feel like my assumption was that you would be further, and the reality is that you are probably closer to the middle than, you know, than what I was expecting. So, was I who you expected to be?
No, I didn't expect you to be so nice. I thought you'd be more guarded, maybe. I don't know. All right, so we're gonna go get coffee sometime.
I think so. There, cheers.
Cheers.
So this was a 30-minute conversation, right? And it took, I don't know if you heard those words at the end. It was like, I didn't expect you to be so nice. Right? But also words of kind of coming to a different understanding of the person in spite of not changing each other. These women did not come to a place of saying, oh, well, you're right about this, and I'm going to change my position at all the way about this. No, but they understood that they had a place at the table with each other, and that the assumptions and the fears, honestly, the things that were being brought into that conversation were not necessarily the drivers, not necessarily the reality that they found in that. This is at the heart of what the writer of Ephesians says. Conduct yourselves with humility, gentleness, and patience. Accept each other with love and make an effort to preserve the unity of the Spirit with the peace that ties you together. You are one body and one Spirit, just as God also called you into one hope. So, my invitation, your homework, is to start an uncomfortable conversation. Not to start the uncomfortable conversation that you anticipate will lead to you winning, or just slugging it out. Because actually, that's kind of reinforcing in its own way. Let it feel good, kind of like, rah. But where does that take us? And where is it that we are one? So go and be humble. And in the words of Mac Davis, that great saint of the church, oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. Okay, I just messed up everything. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.